Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The COVID-19 pandemic is not the first time humanity has been devastated by disease. History has plenty of examples of some of our lowest moments and how we've managed to persevere. One of those moments was almost lost to history. Dr. Jeff Guskey is an ER physician in Dallas and a National Geographic photographer and explorer. His explorations took him to the former Western Front in France, where battles in the First World War were fought above ground, while soldiers created underground cities beneath the trenches that held tens of thousands of troops. It was in these underground cities that Guskey made a discovery that shone light on an almost forgotten African-American combat unit. Dr. Guskey calls it a World War I story that has ties to a pandemic from 20 years before.
So it turns out that after doing this for a number of years, one of the places that I'd been photographing, a friend in France, and I realized was the only trace of a black combat unit from World War I that still exists today. It's beneath a farm field, kind of in the middle of nowhere, located along the former Western Front in France of World War I. So I get a meeting with the chief curator of the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture, Dr. Rex Ellis, before they opened the doors of the new museum. They weren't taking meetings, but when a guy contacts them and says, hey, I found the only trace of a story that they were working on, which would become the exhibit, which is currently up, and it's called We Return Fighting, the African-American Experience in World War One. They took out Oprah's exhibit and put this exhibit in. And I know, no offense to Oprah, but and I'm honored to be part of it. Anyway, they gave me this emergency meeting. Halfway through the meeting, Dr. Ellis, who's this very formal Southern gentleman, deep voice, you know, very authoritative, but wonderful and warm person. And he's, you know, a leading expert on African-American history. You know, he's the chief curator of the most important African-American museum in the world. He says, Jeff, you have stumbled onto I Have a Dream before I Have a Dream. And then he said it again. And that sounds grandiose, but coming from him, it's a big deal. And he was almost challenging me to look further into the story. And so it turns out that this unit wasn't just any black unit. It was the underground command post of a unit called the Black Devils. That was the name the Germans gave them because of their fierceness in combat. And they left carvings, patriotic carvings that show, you know, how devoted they were to America, how, you know, they had this sense of unconditional love for their country and patriotism and a commitment to victory. You know, you see victory, victory carved into the stone, and you see their unit numbers and you see portraits, and it's just beautiful. So what he revealed to me was that this wasn't just any black unit. This was the only all African American unit in the entire U.S. military. This is 102 years ago. And it was an all black unit with all black officers and all black soldiers. Well, now it gets even better, because when you realize that this was, you know, like a needle in a haystack, it turns out that unit was in World War One already 49 years old. So 102 years ago, they were 49 years old. And so it turns out that their story is the story of what should have happened after the Civil War and did, and we don't know it did. They were formed by African-American Union soldiers from the land of Lincoln who come home just after Abraham Lincoln's assassinated and become the torchbearers of Lincoln's vision of freedom for all of us. They lived in a time where America didn't get them, but they got America. And so this discovery is almost like a mystical bridge across time, where these young soldiers are calling out to us saying, we got race wrong, but this is a second chance to get race right. Because it was the way they saw themselves. They did not see themselves as victims, but as visionaries. You know, when you think about Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, he ends with free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we're free at last. They were free inside. They had a freedom that no one could take away, and it was the way they saw themselves. So 20 years before World War I, this unit would become the first unit in the history of America, the first all-African-American unit to ever deploy in war. Why? Because in the midst of a frightening infectious disease pandemic, when soldiers from Illinois were dropping like flies, they go to the governor and say, please send us. It was called the experiment in color. It was a Jackie Robinson moment about which no one remembers. And it was risky. And so with regard to the pandemic, the African-American surgeons who ran the field hospitals understood infectious disease. And their hospitals were so clean that the infection rates plummeted. Countless lives were saved. And for this and many other reasons, they came back as heroes. And so the colonel, who was born a slave, the illegitimate grandson of the longest sitting U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice, he gets invited to the White House. His grandfather inaugurated Thomas Jefferson. And yet here he's being invited to the White House as the first African-American colonel in the U.S. military and the commander of this now heroic unit that served so gallantly. And they show us what it means to be American at a moment when we're all facing extreme danger together. They went into this, they volunteered knowing that they were facing almost certain death, but they did it anyway. And they figured out how to confront the pandemic, just like we're figuring it out now, and we're succeeding. I can tell you, as a practicing emergency physician who's seen COVID patients, I've not heard a single story of any health practitioner, whether it's a doctor, nurse, anyone, calling off because they're afraid, though they are afraid. I mean, they're going to work not knowing if they're going to bring home an infection to their families, not knowing if they will survive. There have been emergency physicians that have died, but they do it anyway because it's the right thing to do. And so that's why this story is so important, because in moments of crisis, we don't see race, we see human. And now we're seeing it because we see this epic response by Americans that is so unselfish and altruistic and courageous, and that really touches the core of who we all are. It's not political. It has nothing to do with right or left, black or white, gay or straight, rich or poor, legal or illegal. It's just human. And that's what these African-American heroes showed us 120 some years ago. And so what it does is it allows us all as a country to realize that there's an unknown narrative on race, a paradigm shift, you know, an unknown story, a success story from the Civil War about a community of African Americans that succeeded beyond any expectations. And it had to do with how they saw themselves and their understanding of Lincoln's vision of freedom that was so corrupted after the Civil War. They held on and they succeeded, and that's the story.
What was it about the unit that identified them as African American in your discovery?
So the answer to your question is that I had been photographing this underground site since 2013, and I became friends with the farmer, and they let me go underground. And right now, you know, there are tractors in there and farm implements and probably carcinogenic chemicals for all I know, you know, where they store all this stuff. But I would go in anyway, crazy. But I had no idea that it was the underground command post of an African-American unit. And so it was over 2 years that I'd been photographing it. And then this friend of mine who helped me with all of this, he's a PhD historian in France who works for the government there, named Dr. Frank Viltart. And he called me. It was just, it was another series of coincidences. I did a cover story for the Sunday New York Times travel section on World War One, and through a series of coincidences, I stumbled onto an African-American, not combat unit, but labor unit, a signature. And that started another journey to understand what that meant. And that led me to a conversation with an expert on World War One African-American soldiers. And when I told my friend about it in France, he wrote me back within under an hour. He said, oh, by the way, that place we've been photographing since 2013, it may be, you know, there may be a history of a black unit there. And that's how I found it. So it was end of 2015. And then I get a meeting in the first week of January 2016 with Dr. Rex Ellis, who says, you stumbled onto I Have a Dream before I Have a Dream. And that takes us through today with the show at the African American Museum. And the story about the pandemic connection, I'd forgotten about it. And I was on a press tour in March before the airlines were shut down. And I was coming back from Washington, D.C., having done television up there. And a light bulb went on. Oh, my God. The Black Devils fought in the pandemic 20 years before. I knew the history, but I'd forgotten about it. And then put that story together in the context of Corona. So that's how it works. It's just being intuitive and listening to your gut. And I think that the hand of fate somehow has a lot to do with it, honestly.
Dr. Jeff Guskey is an ER physician in Dallas, a National Geographic photographer, and an explorer. Dr. Guskey discovered the only surviving trace of a World War I African-American combat unit beneath a farm field in France. The story of the Black Devils is shared in the exhibit We Return Fighting, on display at the Smithsonian National Museum of African-American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. When we come back, the story of the Black Devils and other African-American heroes was almost lost to history.
So what happened in 1895 is that you have this conspiracy to overturn the Civil War. And it has to do with this new technology of mass media.
More with Dr. Jeff Guskey is next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The Black Devils out of Illinois were formally known during the Great War as the 370th U.S. Infantry. They were an all-black combat unit that volunteered to serve two decades earlier in the Spanish-American War after white troops had been decimated by disease. Evidence of the Black Devils was unearthed in what could be called an underground city beneath a French farm field. The Black Devils were hailed as heroes for their efforts in the Spanish-American War and World War I, but their story faded as the century passed. Dr. Jeff Guskey is a Dallas ER physician, a National Geographic photographer, and an explorer. He had been photographing that site for a couple of years before coming across evidence of the Black Devils in France. Guskey traces forgotten history to the beginnings of mass media.
As an ER doc, I wanted to understand why the threat of terrorism and mass destruction is with us still. And it turns out that it is directly tied to something that happened about 125 years ago on the streets of Paris called the Dreyfus Affair, which was where a technique, a formula for power, where a few bad people could poison the conscience of millions and seize power in free societies. And that formula is myth amplified by media to incite rage in crowds for power. So what happened? Turns out that 2 years before this was invented on the streets of Paris was a monumental moment that no one remembers. And it has to do with a new technology, the technology of mass media. So mass media was born. Why? Because of what we know of as Clorox. And so people look at me, are you insane? What does Clorox have to do with mass media? No disrespect to the company or the brand Clorox. They don't have anything to do with this. But Clorox is bleach. It's sodium hypochlorite bleach. And so in 1892, it became for the first time, it became possible to mass produce that chemical. And that changed the technology of communication, because for the first time in human history, the words of a single person could reach millions in a single day. And what made the difference is that with Clorox, you could make a new kind of paper. Prior to Clorox, paper was made from cotton, which could not be mass produced. After the mass production of sodium hypochlorite bleach, you could take wood, grind it up into pulp, bleach it, make newsprint, and newsprint plus web presses equal mass media. So that enabled millions and millions of people to be reached in a single day. Prior to Clorox, you could reach millions with books, but not in a single day. But after Clorox, you could reach millions in a single day, which was a very dangerous development for human predators. These are people that have a pathologic absence of conscience, and they're very good at disguising who they are. And when they get their hands on mass media, it's dangerous because they have a tremendous power over the rest of us, yet they can conceal who they are and what they're up to. And that's the world we have today, which is a world where mass media has almost no checks and balances. And without checks and balances and transparency, we can never tell when media is real or fake. And we haven't figured that out, that America is all about checks and balances and transparency and conscience. Mass media, without checks and balances, really bad people can use technology to poison the conscience of millions and create constituencies of rage, which overwhelm the past and history, and they create these myths. So what happened in 1895 is that you have this conspiracy to overturn the Civil War. And it has to do with this new technology of mass media. It was less than a year after these techniques of media incitement were born in the streets of Paris. It came here, and it's a whole other story, but it overwhelmed this story of success that was happening in Illinois and other places in America following Reconstruction. And so it, in essence, reintroduced de facto slavery and dehumanized African Americans as second class citizens and second class human beings. And America just doesn't work when we dehumanize anyone. And that's the challenge of our time, is these myths of dehumanization that undermine the core humanity, that create these identities and these prejudices. It's not hatred, it's dehumanization. But in crisis, we suddenly get real because we don't see all that. You know, in the ER, it's never about right or left or black or white or any of that. It's just about human. And if somebody has just saved your life and they are black or they're Hispanic and you're white or vice versa, what you feel is gratitude, profound gratitude, because someone has just saved your life. You don't care about race. You feel deeply, deeply moved, and you never forget it.
Well, Dr. Guskey, not only, again, as you mentioned, are you an ER surgeon, you're also a photographer, you're an explorer. So you have a very broad view of humanity as you go into your work as a surgeon. And you also are a student of history. So that's included also in that worldview. I'm curious as to whether this pandemic has made you reexamine some of your life's mission.
Actually, no. It's not about me. You know, it's the things that America has been fighting for. And that I'm not political. I'm kind of independent and have never been oriented politically. But what I learned from these journeys to places where millions have been murdered in modern times is that there's something special about America. First, it's totally imperfect. But second, it rallies in crisis where you have these moments of altruism, whether it's 9/11 or Hurricane Harvey or currently. And we see it in enormously powerful way, spontaneously. People don't question. They know what they need to do, and they do it to help each other. And that trust in each other is the glue that gets us through. And that's, there's something distinctly American about it. And so for all of the stress that we're under and the fear and the very real danger that we are facing together, there's something at our core that resurfaces that will stay with us for a long time to come, because we have been suddenly faced with our strengths This is not about weakness. It's not about uncertainty. It's about clarity, about what it is in all of us that gets us through. It's not that we're ever going to agree on things, because America is about being different without killing each other. But it's about a deep core of civility and altruism in times like this that makes us who we are. And I love it. It's a beautiful thing. And it just gives all of us a sense of meaning and purpose. And we reconnect to what's real and to who we are. And we never forget it. And we can never go back. You know, it suddenly shatters numbness and a sense of anonymity, and where people are asking, you know, what does life mean? Well, you know what it means when you have to go into a situation and put your life on the line for a complete stranger, and you probably are never going to be thanked for it, but you do it anyway because it's the right thing to do. That's what America is.
Dr. Jeff Gusky is a Dallas ER physician, a National Geographic photographer, and an explorer. His work is featured in the exhibit We Return Fighting, The African American Experience in World War I. It's on display at the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. See some of Dr. Gusky's photography at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Ben Henry is our podcast producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.